His wounds, incidentally, seemed to have healed entirely in the meantime, for he no longer felt the least impairment. This was astonishing. Far more than a month ago, he had cut his finger just a tiny bit with a knife, and this wound had still been painful enough just the day before yesterday. "Might I be less fastidious than before?" he thought, already sucking greedily at the cheese, to which he'd found himself immediately inexorably drawn, more than to any of the other items. Quickly, his eyes shedding tears of gratification, he devoured in swift succession the cheese, the vegetables, and the sauce. The fresh food, by contrast, did not taste good to him. In fact, he could not even stand the smell of it, and so dragged the things he wished to eat a little to one side. He had long since finished everything, and was just lying indolently where he was, when his sister slowly turned the key in the lock as a signal for him to withdraw. At once he gave a start, though he'd been on the point of nodding off, and he hurried back under the settee. But it cost him a great deal of willpower to remain there even for the short period of time his sister spent in the room, for the hearty meal he'd enjoyed had caused his abdomen to swell, and he could scarcely breathe in his confinement. In between little attacks of suffocation, he peered out with slightly bulging eyes as his sister, oblivious, used a broom to sweep up not only the remains of his meal, but also the food he hadn't even touched, as if these items, too, were no longer fit for consumption. Then she hastily dumped everything in a bucket that she covered with a wooden lid before carrying it all out of the room again. She had scarcely turned her back when Gregor hauled himself out from under the settee, stretching and puffing up his body. This was how Gregor now received his food each day. Once in the morning, when his parents and the maid were still asleep, and the second time after everyone had eaten lunch, for his parents would always nap a little afterward, and his sister would send the maid out on some errand or other. Surely they didn't want Gregor to starve either, but perhaps it would have been too much for them to experience his meals through more than hearsay. Or perhaps his sister wanted to spare them even this modest sorrow, for Lord knows they were suffering enough. Gregor never learned on what pretext the doctor and locksmith had been sent away that first morning, for since he himself could not be understood, it occurred to no one, not even his sister, that he could understand the others. So when his sister came to his room, he had to be content merely with hearing the sighs she heaved now and then, and her words of supplication addressed to the saints. Only later, when she had started to grow accustomed to all of this, though of course it was impossible to become fully accustomed to circumstances like these, would Gregor sometimes catch a remark that was meant in a friendly way or could be interpreted as such. "He tucked right in today," she would say when Gregor had found the food she left him particularly tasty, while in the opposite case, which gradually began to occur more and more often, she was in the habit of saying almost mournfully, "This time he didn't touch a thing." But while no news reached Gregor directly, he sometimes was able to overhear this and that from the rooms to either side of his, and whenever he heard voices, he would immediately run over to the door in question and press his entire body against it. Especially in the early days, there was rarely a conversation that did not somehow, if only indirectly, refer to him. For 2 days, every mealtime was spent deliberating how the family should now comport itself. But even between meals, this same discussion continued, for at least 2 members of the household were present at all times, since apparently no one wanted to remain at home alone, and of course leaving the apartment unattended was out of the question. What's more, the maid had fallen on her knees before Gregor's mother that very first day. It was not entirely clear what and how much she knew of what had occurred, begging to be released from the family's service. And when she took her leave a quarter of an hour later, she tearfully thanked them for dismissing her, as though this were the greatest benefaction she had experienced at their hands. And without anyone asking this of her, she swore a solemn oath never to reveal anything at all to anyone. Now Gregor's sister was forced to do the cooking in concert with his mother. To be sure, not much effort was involved, as no one did much eating. Again and again Gregor would hear one of them pressing the others to eat, always in vain, and never with any other response than, "Thank you, I've had all I want," or similar words. Perhaps they didn't drink anything either. Often Gregor's sister would ask her father if he wouldn't like a beer, affectionately offering to fetch it herself. And when he did not respond, she would say, wishing to relieve him of all scruples, that she could send the porter's wife for it as well. But then the father would utter a great, "No," and no one spoke of it any longer. Already in the course of the first day, Gregor's father explained the family's finances and prospects not only to Gregor's mother, but to his sister as well. Now and then he would get up from the table, and from his small Wertheim safe, which he had salvaged when his business collapsed 5 years before, extract some receipt or memorandum book. One could hear him opening the complicated lock and then bolting it shut again after removing the desired item. These explanations on his father's part included the first bits of heartening news Gregor had heard since his captivity began. He had been under the impression that his father had retained nothing at all of his former firm's holdings, or at least his father had never said anything to the contrary, and admittedly Gregor himself had never asked him about this. At the time, his only concern had been to do everything in his power to let the family forget, as quickly as possible, the mercantile catastrophe that had plunged all of them into a state of utter hopelessness. And so he had set to work with particular zeal and risen almost overnight from petty clerk to salesman, in which capacity, of course, he had a quite different earning potential, and his professional accomplishments in the form of commissions were immediately transformed into cash that could be plunked down on the table at home before the eyes of his astonished, delighted family. Those had been lovely times, and never since had they been repeated, at least not with such glory, although Gregor later earned so much money that he was in a position to cover the expenses for the entire family, which he then did. All had grown accustomed to this arrangement, not just the family, but Gregor as well. They gratefully accepted the money, and he was happy to provide it. But the exchange no longer felt particularly warm. Only Gregor's sister had remained close to him all this time, and it was his secret plan to send her off to study at the conservatory next year. Unlike Gregor, she dearly loved music, and could play the violin quite movingly. Despite the considerable costs this would no doubt entail, money that could surely be brought in by other means. Often during the brief periods of time Gregor spent in town, the conservatory would come up in his conversations with his sister, but only ever as a lovely dream whose realization was unthinkable, and their parents did not like to hear it mentioned even in this innocuous way. But Gregor was thinking the matter over with great determination and intended to make a formal announcement on Christmas Eve. Thoughts like these, utterly futile in his current state, passed through his head as he stood pressed against the door, eavesdropping. Sometimes general exhaustion made it impossible for him to go on listening, and he would carelessly let his head bump against the door. But then he would immediately hold his head still again, for even the faint sound this produced had been heard in the next room, causing everyone to fall silent. "I wonder what he's getting up to now," his father would say after a while, apparently facing the door, and only then would the interrupted conversation resume. Gregor now learned, and learned quite well. His father tended to repeat himself in his explanations, in part because it had been so long since he'd last concerned himself with such matters, in part because Gregor's mother did not always understand everything the first time, that despite all their misfortunes, a small nest egg, really only a tiny one, still remained to them from before, and had even grown a little thanks to the untouched interest that had accumulated meanwhile. In addition, the money Gregor had brought home each month, he only ever kept a few gulden for himself, had not yet been entirely used up and had grown into a small capital. Behind his door, Gregor nodded eagerly, delighted at this unexpected prudence and thrift. To be sure, he might have used this surplus to pay off more of his father's debts with his boss, and the day on which he would have been able to divest himself of his post would no longer have been nearly so far off. But as things stood, his father's arrangements were no doubt for the best. Now, this money was by no means sufficient to allow the family to live off the interest or anything of that sort. It might possibly have been enough to sustain the family for a year, two at most, but that's all there was. So, in fact, it was the kind of sum one really shouldn't touch, one to be set aside in case of emergency. The money to live on would have to be earned. Gregor's father was admittedly in good health, but he was old and hadn't worked in a full 5 years, and in any case he was supposed to avoid overtaxing himself. In those 5 years, the first holiday in his strenuous and yet unsuccessful life, he had put on a lot of weight and now lumbered as he walked. And was Gregor's old mother now supposed to hold down a job? Despite her asthma, and the fact that it was already an exertion for her to cross from one end of the apartment to the other, for which reason she spent every second day gasping for breath on the sofa beside the open window? And was his sister to go out working, this child of 17, whose lifestyle no one would begrudge her, dressing nicely, sleeping late, helping out around the house, taking part in a few modest entertainments, and above all, playing the violin? Whenever the family came to speak of the necessity of someone earning money, Gregor would let go of the door and throw himself down upon the cool leather sofa beside it, burning with shame and sorrow. Often he would lie there the entire long night, not sleeping for a moment, just scrabbling for hours against the leather, or not shunning the great effort it cost him to push an armchair over to the window. He would climb up the sill, and propped in the armchair, lean against the window, apparently lost in some sort of reverie of how liberating he'd always found it to gaze outside. For in truth, he saw even the objects that were quite near at hand less and less clearly as the days progressed. The hospital across the way, whose all-too-constant sight he had earlier reviled, was now no longer even visible to him, and if he had not known perfectly well that he was a resident of Charlottenstrasse, a quiet but perfectly urban street, he might have imagined he was gazing out his window onto a desert in which the grey sky and the grey earth were indistinguishably conjoined. His attentive sister only had to see the armchair standing beside the window twice before she started pushing it back to its place there each time she tidied his room. Indeed, she even began leaving the window's inner sash open. If only Gregor had been able to speak to his sister and thank her for all she was compelled to do for him, he would have found her ministrations easier to bear. As it was, he suffered beneath them. His sister, to be sure, did all she could to obscure the awkwardness of the situation, and the more time passed, the better she succeeded, of course. But Gregor came to see it all more and more clearly. Even the way she made her entrance jangled his nerves. The moment she came in, without even pausing to shut the door, although she always took such pains to shield the others from the sight of Gregor's room, she would race straight away to the window and fling it open with hasty hands, as though she were on the point of suffocating, then remain standing there, however cold it might be, gulping in the air. All this racing and racket was inflicted on Gregor twice a day. He would be trembling beneath the settee, painfully aware that she would no doubt have willingly spared him this disruption if it were possible for her to endure being in the same room as Gregor with the window closed. Once, it must have been a month since Gregor's metamorphosis, so there was no particular call for his sister to be startled by his appearance. She came into his room a little earlier than usual, and discovered him motionless, and propped upright as if for horrific effect, gazing out the window. Gregor would not have found it surprising if she had chosen not to enter, since his position prevented her from opening the window right away. But she didn't just not enter. She started in alarm and shut the door. A stranger might have thought Gregor had been lying in wait, meaning to bite her. Gregor naturally went and hid himself away beneath the settee. But he had to wait there until noon before his sister returned, and she seemed far more agitated than usual. From this he understood that his appearance was still unbearable to her and would remain so, and that she no doubt had to struggle to force herself not to run away at the sight of even the small part of his body that protruded from beneath the settee. In order to spare her even this sight, one day he carried the bedsheet over to the settee on his back. This labor cost him 4 hours, and arranged it in such a way that he was now completely covered, so that his sister would not be able to see him even if she bent down. If she considered the sheet unnecessary, she could have removed it, since it was clear enough that it could not possibly be considered a pleasure for Gregor to shut himself off so completely. But she left the sheet where it was, and Gregor even thought he glimpsed a grateful look when at one point he carefully lifted the sheet just a little with his head to see how his sister liked the new arrangement. During the first fortnight, Gregor's parents could not bring themselves to enter his room, and often he heard them expressing their heartfelt appreciation of his sister's labors, whereas earlier they had often been annoyed with her, since she had seemed to them a rather useless girl. But now both of them, father and mother alike, would often be waiting just outside Gregor's door while his sister tidied up his room, and as soon as she emerged, she had to give a full report on what things looked like in the room, what Gregor had eaten, how he had behaved this time, and whether perhaps any modest improvement could be seen. His mother, incidentally, had wanted to visit him relatively soon, but his father and sister held her back, appealing at first to a sense of reason as Gregor listened attentively, wholeheartedly approving. Later, though, she had to be held back by force, and when she then cried out, "Let me go to Gregor! He is my unhappy son! Can't you understand that I must go to him?" Then Gregor thought it would perhaps be good for his mother to visit him. Not every day, of course, but perhaps once a week. After all, she had a far better grasp of things than his sister, who, despite her courage, was still a child, and when it came right down to it, had perhaps only taken on this difficult task out of childish frivolity. Gregor's wish to see his mother was soon fulfilled. During the day, Gregor avoided showing himself at the window, if only out of consideration for his parents. But there wasn't much crawling he could do in the few square meters of space the floor provided. Lying still was already difficult for him to endure during the night. Eating had soon ceased to give him even the slightest pleasure. And so to divert himself, he took up the habit of crawling back and forth across the walls and ceiling. He particularly liked hanging from the ceiling high above the room. It was completely different from lying on the floor. One could breathe more freely there. A gentle swaying motion rocked the body, and in the almost happy absent-mindedness Gregor experienced, it might happen, to his own astonishment, that he would let go and crash to the floor. But now, of course, he had his body far better under control than before, and even as great a fall as this did him no harm. His sister immediately noticed the new entertainment Gregor had devised for himself. His peregrinations left behind sticky trails here and there, and she got it into her head to make it possible for Gregor to range as widely as possible by removing the furniture that impeded his movement, above all the wardrobe and desk. But she wasn't able to do so on her own. She didn't dare ask her father for help. The maid most certainly would not have helped her, for this girl of 16 or so, though she had courageously remained in the household after the departure of the former cook, had at the same time requested the privilege of keeping the kitchen locked at all times, and only opening the door upon particular request. And so the sister had no choice but to summon her mother one day when her father was out. The mother arrived with exclamations of feverish joy, but fell silent at the door to Gregor's room. At first, of course, Gregor's sister checked to confirm that all in the room was as it should be. Only then did she allow her mother to enter. With the utmost haste, Gregor had tugged the sheet down lower, and in looser folds so that it really did look as if a bedsheet just happened to have been tossed over the settee. He also refrained from peering out from beneath the sheet this time. For the moment, he would resign himself to not seeing his mother, and just be glad she had come.
"It's all right, come in. You won't see him,"
Gregor's sister said, apparently leading her mother by the hand. Gregor now heard the sounds of these two weak women grappling with this, in fact, quite heavy old wardrobe, with his sister laying claim to the bulk of the work, not listening to the admonitions of her mother, who was afraid she would overtax herself. It took a very long time. After perhaps a quarter of an hour's labor, Gregor's mother said they should leave the wardrobe where it was after all. In the first place, it was too heavy. They would not finish before Gregor's father came home, and by leaving the wardrobe in the middle of the room, they would prevent Gregor from moving around at all. And secondly, it wasn't even clear they were doing him a favor by taking away the furniture. To her, it seemed the opposite was true. The sight of the empty wall positively oppressed her heart. And why should Gregor not experience this same sentiment,
since after all he was long accustomed to having this furniture around him. Wouldn't he feel abandoned in an emptied-out room? And is it not as if, his mother concluded in a low voice. In fact, she had been whispering all along, as though she wished to avoid letting Gregor, whose exact whereabouts she did not know, hear so much as the sound of her voice, for she was convinced he could not understand her words. And is it not as if by removing the furniture we would be showing that we are giving up all hope of a cure, and are ruthlessly abandoning him to his own devices? I think it would be best if we tried to keep the room in precisely the same state it was in before, so that when Gregor returns to us he will find everything unchanged, which will make it that much easier for him to forget all that has happened in the meantime. Hearing his mother's words, Gregor realized that the absence of all direct human address, combined with the monotony of life in his family's midst, must have muddled his understanding over the course of these 2 months, for he could not otherwise explain to himself how he could seriously have wished to have his room emptied out. Did he really want to have this warm room, comfortably furnished with family heirlooms, transformed into a cave or den? In which, to be sure, he would be able to crawl about unhindered in every direction. But at the price of simultaneously, swiftly, and completely forgetting his human past. He was already on the verge of forgetting, and only his mother's voice, which he had gone so long now without hearing, had shaken him awake. Nothing should be removed. Everything must remain. He was unwilling to forego the good influence this furniture had on his condition. And if the furniture got in the way of his practicing this mindless crawling about, this was by no means to his detriment. In fact, it was a great advantage. Unfortunately, his sister was of a different opinion. She had developed the habit, not entirely without cause, to be sure, of presenting herself as the holder of particular expertise when discussing Gregor with her parents. And so now, too, her mother's counsel was reason enough for her to insist on the removal not only of the wardrobe and desk, as she had originally been intending, but of every last bit of the room's furnishings, with the exception of the indispensable settee. Naturally, it was not simply childish defiance and the hard-won self-assurance she had so unexpectedly acquired in recent weeks that dictated this demand. She had, in fact, observed that Gregor needed a great deal of space to crawl around him, while as far as anyone could see, he made no use whatever of the furniture. But perhaps the fanciful imagination of a girl her age played a role as well, a sensibility always seeking its own gratification, and one which Greta now allowed to persuade her to render Gregor's situation even more horrific than before, so as to be able to do even more for him than she had hitherto. For a room in which Gregor held sole dominion over empty walls was a place where no one other than Greta would ever dare to set foot. And so she held fast to a resolve despite the protests of her mother, who appeared troubled to the point of indecision even by the room in its present state. She soon fell silent and helped Gregor's sister remove the wardrobe as best she could. Well, the wardrobe was something Gregor could do without if need be, but the desk would certainly have to stay. And no sooner had the women left the room with the cabinet, groaning as they pressed against its weight, then Gregor poked out his head from beneath the settee to see how he might, cautiously and as considerately as possible, intervene. But unfortunately, his mother was the first to return, while Greta was still in the next room, clasping the wardrobe in her arms and tipping it back and forth on her own, without, of course, moving it from the spot. But Gregor's mother was unaccustomed to his appearance. It might have made her ill to catch a glimpse of him. And so Gregor, in alarm, withdrew as fast as he could to the far end of the settee. But it was too late to prevent the front edge of the bedsheet from stirring a little. This was enough to attract his mother's notice. Startled, she froze for a moment, then went back to where Greta was. Although Gregor kept telling himself that nothing extraordinary was happening, just a few sticks of furniture being shifted about, he was soon forced to admit that all this coming and going on the part of the women, their little exclamations, the furniture scraping against the floor, had the combined effect of a tumultuous hubbub intensifying all around him. And no matter how tightly he drew his head and legs in,
and pressed his body against the floor. He soon was forced to consider that he would not be able to endure this much longer. They were clearing out his room, taking from him all that was dear to him. They had already borne away the cabinet in which lay his fret saw and other tools, and now they were prying loose the desk that had dug itself firmly into the floorboards. This desk, at which he had written his homework assignments as a student at the Commercial Academy, and as a secondary and even primary school pupil. Truly, there was no time left to explore the good intentions of these two women, whose existence, by the way, he had almost forgotten, for their exhaustion was now making them labor in silence, and one heard only their heavy footsteps. And so he burst out of hiding. The women in the next room were just leaning on the desk to catch their breath, changing direction 4 times as he raced about, for he really didn't know what to say first. But then his eyes lit on the picture of the lady clad all in furs, conspicuous now on the otherwise empty wall. And quickly he made his way up to it and pressed himself against the glass, which adhered to him, pleasantly cool against his hot belly. At least this picture, which Gregor's body now covered up completely, was absolutely certain not to be taken away from him. He swiveled his head toward the living room door to observe the women as they returned. They hadn't permitted themselves much rest at all, and were already on their way back. Greta had slung one arm about her mother and was nearly carrying her. "So what should we take next?" Greta said, looking around. Then her eyes met those of Gregor, where he clung to the wall. It was no doubt only because of her mother's presence that she kept her composure. Bowing her face toward her mother to prevent her from glancing about, she said hastily and trembling to be sure, "Let's go back to the living room for a moment, shall we?" Greta's intentions were perfectly clear to Gregor. She meant to bring their mother to safety, and then chase him from the wall. Well, let her try. He sat there on his picture and would not give it up. He'd sooner leap right in her face. But Greta's words succeeded in unsettling her mother even more. Taking one step to the side, she saw the huge brown blotch on the flowered wallpaper, and before she was even able to realize that what she saw there was Gregor, she cried out in a hoarse, shrieking voice, "Oh God, oh God!" and fell back upon the settee, her arms spread wide as though she were giving up everything, and lay there without moving. "Gregor!" his sister shouted, raising her fist with a threatening glower. It was the first time she had addressed him directly since his metamorphosis. She ran into the next room to fetch some sort of essence that could be used to awaken her mother from her faint. Gregor wanted to help as well. There would be time enough to save the picture later. But he stuck fast to the glass and had to tear himself away by force. He too then ran into the next room, as if he might offer his sister advice of some sort, like in the old days, but then could only stand idly behind her as she rummaged among various little bottles, and scared her out of her wits when she turned around. One bottle flew to the floor and shattered. A shard of glass scratched Gregor's face, and some sort of corrosive medicine engulfed him. Without further delay, Greta took up as many bottles as she could hold and ran with them to her mother, slamming the door behind her with her foot. Gregor was now cut off from his mother, was possibly on the brink of death, for which he himself was to blame. He could not open the door if he didn't want to drive away his sister, who had to stay there with his mother. There was nothing for him to do but wait. And tormented by his worries and self-reproach, he began to crawl about, crawling over everything, walls, furniture, the ceiling, and finally in his despair, as the entire room began to spin around him, he fell smack in the middle of the big table. A short while passed. Gregor lay there, spent, and around him all was still, possibly a good sign. Then the bell rang. The maid was naturally locked up in her kitchen, and so Greta had to open the door. Their father was back. "What happened?" were his first words. The look on Greta's face had no doubt revealed all. Greta's voice, as she responded, was muffled. Apparently she was pressing her face against his chest.
"Mother fainted, but she's better already. Gregor has broken out."
"That's just what I expected," the father said. "I kept telling you.
but you women refuse to listen."
To Gregor, it was clear his father had misinterpreted Greta's all-too-brief pronouncement to assume him guilty of some act of violence. So it behooved Gregor to try to pacify his father, as he was lacking both the time and the means to enlighten him. With this in mind, he fled to the door of his room and pressed himself against it, so that the moment his father came into the living room from the vestibule, he would see that Gregor had every intention of returning at once to his room, that it was unnecessary to drive him back inside, and that one had merely to open the door and he would disappear at once. But his father was in no mood to take note of subtleties.
"Ah!" he exclaimed upon entering, in a tone of voice suggesting he was at once furious and glad.
Gregor pulled his head back from the door and turned it toward his father. He had truly not expected to see his father looking as he looked now, standing before him. Though, to be sure, the novelty of crawling about had distracted him recently from paying as much attention as before to the goings-on in the rest of the apartment, and really he ought to have been prepared to find a changed set of circumstances. Even so, was this still his father? The same man who used to lie wearily entombed in his bed when Gregor set off on a business trip, who would greet him on the evening of his return sitting in an armchair in his nightshirt, who, incapable of rising, would merely raise his arms to signify his delight, and on the rare walks they still shared, a few Sundays each year and on major holidays, would trudge between Gregor and his mother, who themselves were already walking rather slowly, moving even a bit slower than they, bundled up in his old overcoat, always with his gingerly advancing cane, and almost invariably coming to a halt and collecting his companions around him whenever he had something to say. Now he was standing properly erect, dressed in a smart blue uniform with gold buttons of the sort worn by porters in banking establishments. Above the jacket's tall, stiff collar, his powerful double chin unfurled. Beneath bushy eyebrows, his black eyes peered out acutely and attentively. His once disheveled white hair had been painstakingly combed and parted until it gleamed. He tossed his cap, to which a gold monogram was affixed, probably that of a bank, across the entire room in a wide arc to land on the settee, then advanced grim-faced upon Gregor with the tips of his long uniform jacket flung back and his hands in his trouser pockets. He himself probably had no idea what he intended to do. At any rate, he raised up each foot unusually high, and Gregor marveled at the gigantic dimensions of his boot soles. But he did not lose any time over them, having learned on the very first day of his new life that his father considered only the utmost severity appropriate for him. And so he fled from his father, hesitating whenever his father stopped short, and then rushing forward again as soon as he stirred. They circled the room several times in this manner without anything decisive occurring, and indeed, given the slow speed at which this interaction was taking place, without its even having the appearance of a chase. For this reason, Gregor remained at floor level for the time being, especially as he feared his father might consider it particular wickedness on his part if he were to take refuge on the walls or ceiling. To be sure, he was forced to realize he would not be able to keep up even this pace for long, since each time his father took a step, he himself had to execute any number of motions. A shortness of breath began to set in. Even in his earlier life, his lungs had been none too reliable. As he now lurched along, reserving all his strength for this continued flight, his eyes barely open, and not thinking in his stupefaction that there might be other ways of saving himself than running across the floor. Indeed, he had almost forgotten he also had the walls at his disposal, though here, to be sure, they were obstructed by delicately carved furniture full of jagged pointy edges. All at once, something flew to the rug beside him, casually flung, and rolled across his path. It was an apple, and already a second one came flying after it. In horror, Gregor stopped in his tracks. There was no point continuing to run now that his father had decided to bombard him. He had filled his pockets from the fruit bowl on the sideboard, and now was tossing apple after apple in Gregor's direction, for the moment not even bothering to take particular aim.
The petite red apples rolled around the floor as if electrified, knocking into each other. One lightly lobbed apple grazed Gregor's back and slid off again harmlessly. But it was immediately followed by another that embedded itself in his back. Gregor tried to drag himself forward, as if this sudden, shocking pain might vanish with a change of place. But he felt nailed to the spot and collapsed there, his legs splaying out, all his senses in a state of utter bewilderment. He caught only a last glimpse of the door to his room flying open, his shrieking sister and his mother running out of the room before her, wearing only a chemise, for his sister had undressed the unconscious woman to let her breathe more freely. Then he saw his mother rush to his father's side, her unfastened skirts slipping one by one from about her waist as she ran, saw her stumble across these skirts as she threw herself at his father, and embracing him, in perfect union with him. But now Gregor's vision began to fail him. She clasped her hands at the back of his father's head and pleaded with him to spare Gregor's life. 3. The grievous wound Gregor had received, which plagued him for over a month, the apple remained lodged there in his flesh, a visible memento, since no one dared to remove it, seemed to have reminded even his father that Gregor, despite his current lamentable, repulsive form, was a member of the family who should not be treated like an enemy, for family duty dictated that the others swallow down the disgust he aroused in them and show him tolerance, only tolerance. And even though this wound cost Gregor some of his mobility, probably for good, and for the time being he required many, many minutes to hobble across his room like an old invalid, crawling up the walls was out of the question now. He was compensated for this worsening of his condition by what seemed to him a perfectly adequate substitute. As evening approached, the door to the living room, on which he would start keeping a sharp eye an hour or two beforehand, would always be opened, so as to permit him, lying in his own dark room and invisible from the living room, to watch the entire family sitting at the brightly lit table and listen to their conversations now, as it were, in an officially sanctioned capacity, and thus quite differently than before. To be sure, these were no longer the animated conversations of earlier times that Gregor used to think back on with a certain longing from various cramped hotel rooms when it was time to throw himself, exhausted, into the damp bedding. Now everything was fairly quiet. Gregor's father would fall asleep in his armchair soon after supper. His mother and sister would admonish one another to silence. His mother, bent far over beneath the light, would be sewing ladies' underthings for a dress shop. His sister, who had taken a job as a salesgirl, was studying stenography and French in the evenings, so as possibly to move to a better position later on. Sometimes Gregor's father would wake up, and as if unaware he had been sleeping, would say to Gregor's mother, "How long you've been sewing again today?" and then go right back to sleep, which would prompt Gregor's mother and sister to exchange weary smiles. In a peculiar form of stubbornness, Gregor's father refused to take off his porter's uniform even at home, and while his nightshirt hung uselessly on its hook, he would slumber where he sat, fully clothed, as though he remained ready for service at all times, and even here was awaiting his supervisor's call. As a result, his uniform, which had not been new to start with, soon forfeited much of its cleanliness, despite the care lavished on it by mother and sister. And Gregor would sometimes gaze for an entire evening at this stain-covered jacket, resplendent with gold buttons, always highly polished, in which the old man slept in considerable discomfort, but nonetheless soundly. The moment the clock struck 10, Gregor's mother would attempt to rouse his father with a few hushed words, and then persuade him to go to bed, for he would get no proper sleep sitting here, and sleep was something Gregor's father, who had to report for duty at 6 in the morning, desperately needed. But in keeping with the stubbornness that had taken hold of him when he started working as a porter, he always insisted on continuing to sit there at the table, even though he kept falling asleep, and that it was only with the greatest effort that he could be persuaded to exchange armchair for bed. Gregor's mother and sister could persist in their little admonishments as doggedly as they liked. For a quarter of an hour,
he would just shake his head slowly, his eyes closed, without getting up. Gregor's mother would pluck at his sleeve, whispering cajoling words in his ear, and his sister would set aside her studies to come to her mother's aid, but to no avail. Gregor's father only settled deeper into his armchair. Only when the women gripped him beneath the arms would he open his eyes, looking by turns at mother and sister and saying, "What sort of life is this? Is this the peace and quiet of my old age?" Then, supported by the two women, he would rise laboriously, as though he himself were receiving the brunt of this burden, and allow the women to escort him to the doorway, where he would shoo them away and continue on his own, while Gregor's mother hastily threw down her sewing and his sister her pen so they could run after him to offer further assistance. The household was ever further reduced. The maid was now let go after all. A bony giant of a charwoman with white hair flapping about her head came by in the morning and evening to perform the heaviest labors. Everything else was handled by Gregor's mother along with all her sewing. It even came to pass that several pieces of jewelry that had been in the family, jewels Gregor's mother and sister had delighted in wearing at entertainments and festivities, were sold, as Gregor would learn in the evening when the price each piece had brought would be discussed. But their greatest lament was always that they were unable to leave this apartment, which was far too large for their current circumstances, since no one could imagine how Gregor might be moved. But Gregor understood that it was not only out of consideration for him that a move was being ruled out, since he could easily enough have been transported in a crate of appropriate size with a few air holes. The main thing keeping the family from moving to a new apartment was their complete sense of hopelessness, and the thought that they had been struck with a misfortune such as no one else in their entire circle of relations and friends had ever experienced. They were fulfilling to the utmost the demands the world makes on the poor. Gregor's father fetched breakfast for the petty employees at the bank. His mother sacrificed herself for the underclothes of strangers. His sister ran back and forth behind the shop counter at her customer's behest. But this was all the strength they had. And the wound in Gregor's back would begin to ache anew when mother and sister, having brought his father to bed, would now return, and leaving their work where it lay, huddle close beside one another, pressing their cheeks together, when Gregor's mother, gesturing toward his room, would say, "Shut the door now, Greta." And when Gregor was left in the dark again, while next door the two women intermingled their tears, or else sat there tearless, staring down at the table. Gregor spent his nights and days almost entirely without sleeping. Sometimes he thought about taking the family's affairs in hand again, just as he used to, the next time his door was opened. Once more his boss and the general manager would appear before his mind's eye after all this time, the clerks and apprentices, the dull-witted hired man, two or three friends from other firms, a chambermaid from a provincial hotel, a sweet fleeting specter, the shop girl from a haberdashery, whom he had courted earnestly but too slowly. All of these now appeared to him, interspersed with strangers or people already forgotten. But instead of coming to his aid and that of his family, every last one of them was unapproachable, and he was glad when they disappeared. At other times he would be not at all in a frame of mind to look after his family. Instead he was filled with rage at how poorly he was attended to, and although he could not imagine anything he would have liked to eat, he plotted how he might gain access to the pantry so as to help himself to what, despite his total absence of hunger, was his due. Without bothering to consider how she might give Gregor particular pleasure, his sister would quickly thrust some randomly chosen foodstuff into his room with her foot on her way to work in the morning or at midday, only to sweep it out again at night with a quick swipe of the broom, paying no heed if the food had been only barely nibbled at or, as was most often the case now, not touched at all. Setting Gregor's room to rights, a task she now saved for the evenings, could not possibly have been done any more perfunctorily. Great streaks of dirt extended across the walls, with balls of dust and rubbish lying scattered about.
At first, when Gregor's sister came into his room, he would position himself in corners particularly indicative of this problem, to reproach her, as it were, by his presence there. But he could just as well have spent entire weeks sitting there without any improvement on his sister's part. After all, she saw the dirt as plainly as he did, but had made up her mind to leave it be. At the same time, with a sensitivity that was new in her, one that had now taken hold of the family as a whole, she was on her guard to make sure the task of tidying Gregor's room was reserved for her. Once Gregor's mother had subjected his room to a thorough scrubbing, which she accomplished only after using up several buckets of water. Admittedly, all this moisture was itself an affront to Gregor, who lay stretched out, bitter and immobile, upon the settee. But his mother did not escape punishment. For no sooner had his sister remarked the change in Gregor's room that evening than she ran into the living room, grievously insulted, and ignoring her mother's imploringly raised hands, set to weeping so violently that her parents, naturally her father, was startled out of his chair, at first stood by helpless and astonished, until they too began to stir. On the right, Gregor's father reproached his mother for not having left the cleaning of Gregor's room to his sister, while on the left, he shouted at Gregor's sister, threatening that she would never again be permitted to clean Gregor's room, while his mother attempted to drag his father, now so agitated he hardly recognized himself, into the bedroom. Gregor's sister, shaking with sobs, pummeled the table with her tiny fists, and Gregor hissed loudly in fury, because it had occurred to no one to shut the door of his room, to spare him this sight and commotion. But even if Gregor's sister, who was exhausted by her professional work, had wearied of caring for Gregor as she'd previously done, there was absolutely no need for his mother to fill her shoes, and Gregor needn't have suffered neglect. For now the charwoman was here, this old widow, who had seen and survived the worst in her long life with the help of her sturdy bones, felt no particular repugnance toward Gregor. Without being at all inquisitive, she had once chanced to open the door to his room, and seeing Gregor, who had begun to run back and forth, although no one was chasing him, she stood there staring in astonishment, her hands clasped across her lap. Ever since, she never failed to open the door a crack for a moment every morning and evening to look in on him. At the beginning, she would call him over to her, saying things that were probably intended to sound friendly, like, "Hey, over here, you old dung beetle," or, "Just look at the old dung beetle." Thus addressed, Gregor gave no reply, but instead remained where he was, immobile, as if the door had never been opened. If only this charwoman, instead of being allowed to disturb him uselessly at whim, had been given instructions to clean his room daily. Once early in the morning, a heavy rain, perhaps already a portent of the coming spring, was beating against the window panes. Gregor became so infuriated when the charwoman started up again with her quips that he turned on her as if to attack, if admittedly slowly and decrepitly. But instead of being frightened, the charwoman just picked up a chair that was standing beside the door and held it high in the air, and as she stood there, her mouth gaping wide, her intention was clear. Not to close her mouth again until the chair in her hand had come crashing down upon Gregor's back. "Aha! So that's as far as it goes?" she asked as Gregor turned around again, and she placed the chair calmly back in its corner. Gregor now ate almost nothing at all. Only if he happened by chance to wander past the food that had been prepared for him might he playfully take a bite of something into his mouth, where he would hold it for hours, and then usually spit it out again later. At first he thought it was his sorrow at the state of his room that prevented him from eating. But in fact, he had resigned himself very quickly to the changes there. Everyone had gotten into the habit of using his room to store things there was no space for in other parts of the apartment, and now there were many such things, since one room of the apartment had been rented out to three lodgers. These solemn gentlemen, all three of them were bearded, as Gregor once noted, peering through the crack of the door, were scrupulously intent on having everything tidy, not just in their room, but also, since they were now paying rent here, in the entire household, particularly the kitchen.
They could not bear the presence of unnecessary, much less dirty, items. Moreover, they had brought most of their own furnishings with them. For this reason, many things had become superfluous, things that could not be sold, but were still too valuable to throw out. All of this found its way into Gregor's room, as did the ash box and the garbage pail from the kitchen. The charwoman, always in a great hurry, would simply fling any unserviceable item into Gregor's room. Mercifully, Gregor generally saw only the object in question and the hand that held it. The charwoman may have intended at some point, when she had occasion or a free minute, to come collect these things, or else throw all of them out at once. But as it was, they remained wherever they first landed, except when Gregor made his way through the refuse, stirring it around, at first out of necessity, since there was no room left for him to crawl about, but later with ever-increasing pleasure. Though after these wanderings, which left him mortally exhausted and sad, he would spend hours without moving. Since the lodgers sometimes also took their supper at home in the shared living room, the living room door remained shut on some evenings, but Gregor was happy to forgo having the door open. In fact, even when it was open, he sometimes failed to take advantage of it, and instead, unbeknownst to his family, would remain lying in the darkest corner of his room. Once, however, the charwoman had left the door to the living room slightly ajar, and ajar it remained even when the lodgers came in that evening and struck a light. They sat down at the head of the table, where in earlier times Gregor had sat with his father and mother, unfolded the napkins and took up their knives and forks. At once Gregor's mother appeared in the doorway with a serving dish filled with meat, and right behind her came his sister, bearing a plate piled high with potatoes. A heavy vapor rose from the steaming food. The lodgers bent over the dishes that had been placed before them, as though wishing to inspect them before beginning their meal, and in fact the one who sat in the middle and appeared to be an authority figure to the other two cut off a piece of meat right there on the platter to check whether it was tender enough and didn't have to be sent back to the kitchen. He was satisfied, and Gregor's mother and sister, who had been watching nervously, now smiled with relief. The family members themselves ate in the kitchen. Nonetheless, Gregor's father visited the living room on his way to the kitchen and with a single bow, cap in hand, took a tour around the table. The lodgers all rose from their seats and mumbled into their beards. Left alone again, they ate in almost perfect silence. It struck Gregor as peculiar that amid all the various sounds of this meal, one could also make out their champing teeth, as if to demonstrate to Gregor that a person needs teeth to eat, and that even the most splendid jaws, if toothless, can accomplish nothing at all. "I'm hungry," Gregor said sorrowfully to himself. "But not for these things. Just look how these lodgers take their nourishment while I am wasting away." On this very evening, Gregor couldn't remember having heard the violin once in all this time. The sound of it was heard coming from the kitchen. The lodgers had already finished their evening meal. The one in the middle had pulled out a newspaper, giving each of the others a page. And now the three of them were reading, leaning back in their chairs and smoking. When the violin began to play, their interest was piqued. They got up from their chairs and tiptoed over to the doorway leading to the vestibule, where they stood in a tight cluster. The sounds of this activity must have traveled to the kitchen, for Gregor's father now called out, "Are the gentlemen disturbed by this playing? It can be silenced at once." "On the contrary," said the one in the middle. "Would the young lady care to join us and play here in the living room, where it is much more comfortable and pleasant?" "Why, of course," Gregor's father exclaimed, as though he were the violinist. The gentleman went back into the room and waited. Soon Gregor's father arrived with the music stand, his mother with the sheet music, and his sister with the violin. His sister calmly prepared to play. His parents, who never rented out rooms in earlier days and therefore were treating these lodgers with exaggerated deference, did not even dare to sit in their own armchairs. His father leaned against the door, his right hand tucked between two buttons of his closed livery jacket. His mother, meanwhile, was offered an armchair by one of the lodgers, and since she left the chair where he had happened to place it, she sat off to one side in a corner. Gregor's sister began to play. On either side, his father and mother attentively followed each movement of her hands. Attracted by her playing, Gregor had ventured a bit further than usual and was already sticking his head into the living room. It scarcely surprised him that he had become so inconsiderate of the others. Earlier on, his considerateness had been a source of pride, and he had all the more reason to keep himself hidden away now. Thanks to the dust that lay everywhere in his room and would swirl up at the slightest motion, he too was covered in dust. He dragged around threads, hair, and food scraps clinging to his back and sides. His general indifference was far too great now for him to keep up with the habit he'd once practiced several times a day, flipping over so as to scrub his back against the rug. And despite his condition, he did not hesitate now to continue his advance a little way out onto the immaculate floor of the living room. To be sure, no one paid him the slightest heed. The family was completely absorbed in the violin playing. The lodgers, on the other hand, having at first positioned themselves, hands in their trouser pockets, much too close behind his sister's music stand, so that they could all look at the sheet music, which surely must have distracted her, soon withdrew to the window, conversing in an undertone, and remained there, anxiously observed by Gregor's father. It appeared more than clear they had been disappointed in their expectation of hearing beautiful or entertaining violin music, and now, tired of the whole performance, were continuing to tolerate this disturbance of their peace only out of politeness, particularly the way in which all of them were blowing the smoke of their cigars high into the air from their noses and mouths suggested extreme agitation. And yet his sister's playing was so lovely. Her face was tilted to one side. Searchingly, sadly, her eyes followed the lines of notes. Gregor crept a bit farther forward and ducked his head down close to the floor so as perhaps to catch her eye. Was he a beast that music so moved him? He felt as if he were being shown the way to that unknown nourishment he craved. He was determined to creep all the way up to his sister, to pluck at her skirt, and in this way indicate to her that she should come to his room with her violin, for no one here was rewarding her playing as he meant to reward her. He would not allow her to leave his room ever again, at least as long as he was alive. His horrific figure would, for the first time ever, be useful to him. He would be at all the doors of his room at once, growling at his attackers. But his sister should remain with him not by force, but of her own free will. She should sit beside him on the settee, bend down the better to hear, and he would confess to her that he'd had the firm intention of sending her to the conservatory, and that if the disaster had not disrupted his plans, he would have made a general announcement last Christmas. Christmas had passed now, hadn't it? Without letting himself be swayed by objections of any sort. After this declaration, his sister would be moved to the point of tears, and Gregor would raise himself to the height of her armpit and kiss her throat, which, now that she went to the office every day, she wore free of ribbon or collar. "Herr Samsa!" the gentleman in the middle shouted at Gregor's father, and without wasting a single word, pointed his finger at Gregor, who was slowly advancing. The violin fell silent. The middle lodger at first just smiled and shook his head, turning toward his friends, then looked again at Gregor. Gregor's father apparently found the task of driving Gregor back into his room less urgent than that of calming the lodgers, despite the fact that they did not appear particularly worked up, and seemed to be finding Gregor more entertaining than the music. He hurried over to them and tried with outspread arms to herd them back into their room, at the same time using his body to shield Gregor from their view. And now they did, in fact, become a little angry, though it was no longer clear whether this was on account of Gregor's father's behavior, or the realization dawning on them that without their knowledge, they had been sharing their home with a roommate of this sort. They demanded explanations of Gregor's father. Now it was their turn to throw their arms into the air. They plucked uneasily at their beards and only slowly withdrew in the direction of their room. Meanwhile, Gregor's sister, who had been standing there at a loss since her playing had been so unexpectedly interrupted. She still held violin and bow in her carelessly dangling hands, looking over at the notes as though she were continuing to play. All at once pulled herself together, laid her instrument in the lap of her mother, who still sat there in her armchair, her lungs heaving as she fought for breath,
and ran into the next room, toward which the lodgers were now moving somewhat more quickly as Gregor's father urged them on. One saw how, beneath his sister's practiced hands, the bed's blankets and pillows flew into the